Hey guys, let me ask you a question. How are you rehearsing? Are you a musician out there and you're rehearsing in your house or you're rehearsing in your garage and you got like these crazy curfews like 9 p.m. and you can't be too loud and you got to do certain stuff with brushes because you got neighbors bitching at you or your husband or wife bitching at you or your mom or dad bitching at you saying, hey, come on, turn it down. Hey, come on, you guys. Hey, don't go over that one more time. Well, you know what? There's a great place where you can go and take care of all that business in a really professional manner with a great PA, good microphones, a relaxed environment. It's called Space Rehearsal and Recording, a uniquely Austin experience, preserving its musical heritage and inspiring future artists. Space is an affordable venue for rehearsal and recording situated just a few short miles south of downtown Austin. They have 31 spacious rooms, wide gallery-lit corridors, and excellent parking. They also have the space to help you with your creative endeavors. Join their customers that range from local and international musicians, acting troupes, yoga practitioners, performance artists, and yes, me. I'm in Skyrocket. We have a room there. We practice there all the time, in comfort and in a professional manner. AC, all things are great there. Space ATX, take your project down there. You can call them 512-448-9518. Tell them that How Did I Get Here sent you, and you will get one free hour. That's Space, spaceatx.com, 512-448-9518. Get down there, get out of the garage, and start rehearsing with the pros. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for listening to the show. I know that it's not something you just happen upon or you come across. It's something you actively have to go search out and download or sit at the page and listen to. So thank you so much for doing that. I enjoy talking to you guys, and I feel like at this point now, we're into 270-something episodes, and I feel like now you're a part of my life. Like, I discuss the personal parts of my life with you guys. And then I sit down and I have a conversation with somebody else, usually a musician, someone that I share something in common with. And we have a conversation about who this person is and what they do. Today is no different. I have an incredible show for you guys today. I have Warner Hodges. He is the guitar player and has been since the beginning for Jason and the Scorchers. They're still out there, so they're still making records. And he is an incredibly prolific artist. He makes solo records. He does the Jason and the Scorchers thing. He plays in the Dan Baird band. He has another band with Dan Baird called the Bluefields. So he's constantly making records, constantly playing shows, constantly doing stuff and keeping himself interested for so many years. And I've known about Jason and the Scorchers since they came out. They were like they're like the first like real buzz band I heard about. And what they were doing back then was a style of music called cowpunk. And they were like the architects of cowpunk, which later on became New Sincerity, which later on became Americana. And it's kind of stayed there, right? Americana? Is that the same? Has it stayed the same, or has that changed to something else now? I'm not quite sure. Anyway, Warner E. Hodges is an incredibly interesting man. We have a great conversation. It happened a while back, and I'm glad I brought it to you. He came to town. He did a show. He came by. We did a conversation thing, and now you're about to hear it. But first, before we get to that, let me tell you what's going on with me. I had an incredibly busy weekend with Skyrocket. We went out and played in Houston at the Zoo on Friday, and that was interesting. A live cheetah came; they brought a live cheetah out. And then we got up and played, and then we played the next day in San Antonio for a fundraiser for the Junior Diabetes Research Foundation, and there they raised over $1.6 million for the Junior Diabetes Research Foundation, which was fantastic. So by the time we went on stage and they had raised all that money, it was a celebration and the show was great. They were filming it. We were on Jumbotrons. We were acting out for the camera, and I believe that the people enjoyed it. They seemed to enjoy it a lot. And then Sunday, I went out and played a show, a Smash Fest for this child, Smash, who is not doing well. She's in the hospital, and I played a benefit for her solo. Had my friend Ryan Holly, who was also playing on the thing, get up and play with me, and we had a great time playing, and overall, it was a great weekend of music. But let me tell you what I did yesterday, which was Monday. I am starting a new podcast with a couple of friends of mine. We are starting a new podcast. It's called Does Anybody Remember Laughter? And I've been talking about it to you guys for a little while. My friend Anar was held back a little bit through some health problems. We were going to record some stuff. I went to Houston for a week with my grandfather's situation, and then he passed away. So we finally got around to recording two episodes yesterday. So this show is a three-host show. Me, my friend Anar Peterson, and my friend Ashley Bergeron. The three of us are the hosts, and what we do is we talk about one specific movie that has to do with music, and we have a guest that comes in, and we discuss that movie for about an hour, you know, and 15 minutes. So it's going to be great. It's going to be on the Tasty Podcast Network, which is owned by my friend Charlie Hodge, and you know, I love that guy. You know that he does great shows, and so that show will be up, I believe, probably within the month. So look for that. Does anybody remember Laughter? We did La Bamba, and we did the Buddy Holly story. So first, La Bamba will come out, and then the Buddy Holly story will come out. So that's been very, very, very exciting, okay? I've been very happy this last week. I've had some really interesting new things happening, which I guess I will talk about as they unfold a little bit more. All right? That's what I'll do. I got to keep my cards close to the chest just a little bit with you guys. I don't want to lay anything on you that might be too weird. I want to process stuff, and then I want to get to you guys and explain it to you. Like when I sat down and talked to Warner Hodges. This is going to be a great conversation. You're going to really enjoy it. The guy is fantastic, loaded with great stories and a very rich musical history, and also a hunger to keep on making music, which is something that I never want to lose. I would like to thank my friends Penny Joe Pulis and my lifelong friend Jason Swedberg for hooking me up with him. They had him in town doing a house concert, and they were like, "Hey, you got to do. How Did I Get Here, Warner?" And he was into it. Anyway, I'd like to thank Warner for taking the time to do it. I'd like to thank Jason and Penny Joe for hooking me up. Now, enjoy my conversation with the incredible Warner Hodges. Let's get down.
Long with a dog and a tug and a radio on, and a laugh that plays like a country song that you never heard on the radio. Now he wasn't too keen on company, Hollywood or NYC. Once he blew up his TV, cause it wouldn't play his favorite show. And he yells, and he roars, loves the Stones, hates the Doors.
That's kind of creepy. It starts to happen after a while. I've got it at the movies like a couple months ago. I thought there's a place where they bring you food to the thing, and they bring you your bill at the end.
Yeah.
And I could not figure out how much I owed.
How old are you?
45.
45 is the magic.
To go down.
No, it's the magic number the eye doctor told me.
Really?
I had 20/20. All of my kids wore glasses, and I had 20/20. My wife's got poor vision. And, I mean, I used to watch baseball games with my son, and it was like, you know, dude, you can't even keep up with the score. You know, I'd ask him what the score was. Oh, it's 2-1. It's like, no, it's not. It's 8-0, you know.
Oh, my God.
But at 45, all of a sudden, I got a smattering of, oh, this is what it's like. And it started out morning and night. I guess in the morning, my eyes weren't, all of a sudden, I couldn't read. I'm a voracious reader. And it's like, you know, it would eventually, after being awake an hour or two, it would be all right. And then at night, after a long day, same thing would happen. And I was like, what the hell, you know.
Yeah.
And it was just getting old, you know.
That happens,
54
man.
Now, and it's like, no readers, forget it. You
no.
Know, can't
I
read
guess I, got, I should get them. That way I can read. The other thing is my notes look like a person with epilepsy wrote them with this. I was writing them with this thing on. So what are you doing? What are you doing here? Are you recording a record?
No,
are you
I came down. I'm doing album? A house concert at Penny's and Jason's tonight.
Right.
And I came down a day or two early just to visit with friends, and I was going to try to hook up with Grissom, but he's sick as a dog.
He's sick as a dog.
Yeah, and I played on a guy's record yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, it was just...
I got some texts that you'd been in the studio.
Yeah.
Are you good friends with Grissom?
I've known David a long damn time. Yeah. We're not.
Did you guys do stuff with Joe Ely back in the time?
Yeah.
Okay.
The old days,
okay.
The Scorchers played
with Joe. That's
exact
time.
A lot way back. Young.
Yeah.
Yeah. And David used to come to Nashville a lot, and he's real good friends with a couple of my other buddies that are, you know, guitar slingers, Audley Freed and a few of those guys.
Audley's amazing.
Audley's a monster.
Yeah. Yeah, he's totally missing. Did he play with the Dixie Chicks too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For
yeah,
a while. Yeah. I think David got him in the band for a while.
Right.
He's out now with Cheryl, I guess. Cheryl Crow with Peter Stroud. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, see, they've got a monster band. It's Fred Evingham on drums and Robert Kearns on bass, Audley
oh,
and
no more
Peter
Tim,
Stroud.
No more Tim Smith?
No, I don't think so.
Do you know that guy? No. Atlanta guy?
No, I don't know him. But, I mean, it makes that. I think Peter's the band leader. He's an Atlanta yeah. guy, so that makes perfect sense, you know. Once Audley was in, I'm sure Audley brought Robert in when they needed a bass player because they're best friends.
Right.
So, and Robert can sing like a bird. I mean, yeah, you get the two for package. He's a great bass player, but his vocals are just, he probably can sing higher than Cheryl can. He's
probably.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing singer.
Do you do a lot of sideman gigs like that? A lot of guitar guy?
No, I'm starting to do more, a lot of records, but no, I never.
That's the best because you don't have to be on the road.
I love being on the road, and yeah. I would do the sideman thing. I think in the old days, I was just a little too voracious for the Nashville machine in particular.
Right.
Now that I'm calming down, getting a little older, and I'm kind of on my third flavor of the month. I've been around so damn long, I'm on my like third time through.
Yeah, you know? Well, I mean, that's what I was going to say. I wrote this down because I was already, I mean, I got into this young, you know?
Yeah.
And my mom dated a guy that owned a studio, and I was around a lot of music business people.
Yeah.
In 84 and 85. Hey, Rusty. Hey, Johnny. In like 84 and 85. And I remember when Jason and the Scorchers, there was a heavy buzz. Like,
oh, yeah.
It was like a big yeah. MTV. It
oh,
was
yeah.
like a big talked about band. You guys did
yeah.
a lot of big shows.
Yeah.
And
we
then
did we did all our videos down here. I mean, there was an Austin video director that we, I mean, that's why I was down here so much. We shot all but the very first video we shot in Austin. So
huh.
I don't remember the guy's name, but we were down here a lot. You know, we played here a lot. And we come down here, we recorded some here, and we did all of our videos were shot down here in Austin. So
yeah, so you guys were like purveyors of what then was called cowpunk,
yeah.
which is then was I mean didn't that become New Sincerity? Then became No Depression? Then became
oh, yeah.
Americana?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. We were Americana 15 years before they had a name.
Yeah,
for
way
the
before.
Shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you guys were one of the first. Who else was in that kind of crew of bands that mixed knowledge of country music with the amped up volume and speed of punk and rock?
Well, there was Alone Justice was around.
Alone Justice.
Alejandro played with the Kinman brothers out, and I can't remember the name of the damn band. It was before the True Believers and stuff.
Even though
they
even
had
though,
a song called Amanda Ruth.
Who was that?
I know I can hum the damn song. It was the Kinman brothers, but Alejandro was the lead guitar player in that band. That's where I first met him. I can't remember what the name.
True Believers.
Before the True Believers. It was an L.A. band.
Skunks. No, was from here. God damn it! I'm
but
sorry.
You know, the Blasters kind of came out a little
right.
bit later, but we had the first record. I think we had beat everybody to the punch with the first record. So.
What label were you guys on?
At that point, Warner? Praxis, pre EMI. Our manager owned a little. I mean, we literally did what's done now. The way we got our EMI record, we sold 30,000 records out of his garage pre-internet. You know, I mean, it was pretty.
Way pre-internet.
We're talking 1981.
Yeah.
You know, and we did a little EP. Literally had the money to print up 2,000 of them. 1,000 of them didn't have covers. It was just a white sleeve. We couldn't afford to have a cover on all of them.
Right.
And we sold those real quick. And then we did Fervor. And between that and touring and all that crap, we kind of started gaining a little bit of attention from record labels. By 83, we had a major label deal, which, of course, in those days, we thought was the end-all be-all. We were going to be the next damn Beatles, you know?
But it did have that vibe. Like, this is a new thing, and these are the guys that are on the forefront of it.
When we went to Britain the first time, the European record label, EMI, in Europe, they pushed all the buttons, and it was back when there were sounds Melody Maker and New Musical Express, which were like Rolling Stone, but it was three magazines in Britain, and we were on the cover in the same week on all three magazines, and that had not happened since the Beatles. And it was just like, oh my God, this thing is really going to take off. You know, it's going to blow up. And, you know, the first two records did do a whole lot, but the third record, when we needed to deliver the record, we delivered probably the worst Scorcher record of the bunch. EMI had been after us for the radio hit, radio hit, radio hit. And I have to say, all this looking back.
But music on the radio didn't sound like the music you guys, like the production. No. You guys were doing real things. You weren't playing through PCM 90s and kind of weird shit was going on at the time.
And we looked DX7s. Up the first two records. They got Terry Manning to work with us. We had done Fervor.
Right.
And they brought Terry in. We added Sweet Marie to it. We recut all kinds of stuff where we'd run out of money as an independent band, remixed the record, and had a real guy that knew his way around the studio. Yeah. He had done Eliminator with ZZ, and he was on fire. You know? And at that time, people forget whether you like Eliminator or what happened with ZZ Top. They were dead in the water. They had had a run. It was over. That little old band from Texas, nobody was buying it anymore. And when they did Eliminator, it completely was a resurgence for them.
Beyond resurgence, yeah. They had never reached those highs before.
It bought them another 20 years. And it was great. You know, hell, I'm a Billy Gibbons guy.
Yeah.
But it for us, EMI had started pounding us to death. They needed that radio hit. And, you know, looking back at it in hindsight, when we left EMI, it was like, oh, they didn't do what needed to be done. They did what they knew how to do. We were a square peg, and they were trying to cram us in a round hole.
And that was both the thing that was your strong point, because you guys were so fucking different than everybody else
and
at
our
that
weakness.
Time. Yeah.
You know, it's a weird thing. I was talking to Penny Joe yesterday. Are we actually recording?
Yeah.
Good. I was talking to Penny Joe yesterday. If we came out now, we're just a country hat band. You know, we're just now, but in those days, there was no distorted guitar on any country record ever. Country music in those days was Lee Greenwood. You know, it was like Vegas country. It was not that country music's great now by any means. A lot of it's just like, I don't know, it reminds me of Southern rock when I was a teenager. But I'm talking the Nashville Machine country music.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it sounds like a cross between rap and Def Leppard.
Big time.
Like,
big
it really
time,
does. Like, it's real big weird.
Time. Dude, when oh my God, I've lost his name. Producer married to Shania Twain.
Yeah, the Def Leppard guy. Yeah,
well, he did Back in Black,
Lang.
Dude.
Yeah.
You know, he did Highway to Hell,
Back
in Black.
Right, I know, but he didn't go to Nashville and make Shania Twain sound like AC/DC.
No.
He made her sound like Def Leppard.
But, I mean, it's Def Leppard records with a banjo and some dobro.
Totally.
You know, I mean, it's
totally.
Just like...
That's exactly what I thought when I first heard
and,
it.
And, you know, like her... Don't like her. She's the only artist I know. She did 18 million, then 19 million, then 20 million. She followed it up twice. Unheard of. You don't do that. Now, I'm not a Shania Twain fan. I've never bought the record. But, you know, sell 20 million records.
Yeah.
And then guess what your record label wants you to do next time? They want you to sell 21 million.
Yeah, there's more people.
Not an easy thing to do. Even Michael Jackson couldn't do it. You know? I mean, I remember the Prince thing where he did Purple Rain and he sold 14 million copies, and then he did Raspberry Beret, which sold 3 million. It was a flop.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Exactly.
He sold 3 million records. Yeah. You know, it's a flop.
Yeah. Well, there's no one's having that problem now.
Those days
Nobody.
Are gone.
Yeah.
Those days, it's actually, now, though, that's what I was saying. I mean, where Jason and the Scorchers started out, we're right back there. We're shipping records out of my mother's basement.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, we know how to do that. We actually knew how to do that in the old days. We know how to do it now.
So the band is still together?
Yeah, we don't work nearly as much. It's Jason and I. Our drummer, Perry Baggs, died last summer.
Oh, I'm sorry
He
to
was
hear
a
that.
Severe diabetic, and it finally got him. Jeff, our old bass player, actually lives down in São Paulo, Brazil.
Oh, wow.
And which is kind of funny, though. He contacted me the other day. He's doing a rock and roll record. I'm going to play drums on it.
So, oh, great. Because you started out on drums.
I was a drummer first.
Yeah.
So. which is kind of cool. Like, out of nowhere, Jeff contacts me and wants to know if I play drums on his record. It's like, hell yes, I'll play drums on your record. God knows what it'll be, but that's okay. He's Jeff Johnson. It's all right.
Yeah.
We literally go back to 16 years old, so it's okay.
Wow.
But Jason and I, we've got two guys, a guy named Pontus Snibb, a drummer that lives in Stockholm, Sweden, and Al Collins, bass player and really good background singer that plays with us, and they're great. And we've done a record 3 years ago. I think I brought you a copy of it, Halcyon Times, which was received by our fan base and critics and all that as, don't know if it is or not, I don't get to rate the damn things, but it was called our best piece of work, or compared to our best piece of work, and 27 years deep at that time, that's hard to do. You know, it's hard to reinvent yourself that deep.
Yeah.
So it was nice to go out and tour and basically the live show with 10 new songs, which for Jason and I was wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't get to do that.
How was the crowd response to those songs?
They loved it. The new record did well, and I think we're going to record another one next year.
That's great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful thing.
So when you were doing this thing back then, and you were saying before it kind of like died out and you were poised to do this thing, did you guys do like... I want to say that I saw you guys like on TV on stuff like
we did the third record, which didn't do well, lost our EMI deal, which
not fast.
We had been there 7 years, okay. 6-7 years, and they had tried. They really did try, but the third record didn't do what they needed it to do, and it to me. What we did on Still Standing, we tried to give them the radio hit they wanted. We didn't give them their hit, and we did the weakest Jason and the Scorchers record ever done.
Compromising.
There was a lot
work.
Of problems. Jeff, our bass player, was getting ready to leave the band. There were some drug and alcohol problems inside of the band, and but we moved over to A&M.
Well, what year was it? Like 85?
87. 87.
Yeah.
We moved over to A&M Records, got a new bass player, added a guitar player, and did one more record. That literally we got dropped the day it came out. And I decided at that point, fuck the music business.
Yeah.
And I quit playing for about 3 years and damn near drank myself to death.
What did you do with your time outside of drinking?
Well, I actually got a gig playing with Iggy Pop, but I got fired showing up to the first rehearsal drunk. So... it's kind of rough when the egg fires you, that's kind of rough. You know, rough. We were drinking buddies and... You know, when Iggy says, no, you're a little too... That's like getting rehab advice from Keith Richards, you know?
Yeah.
But it was the first nail in the coffin that broke the camel's back, you know? And I sobered up in 92 and was never going to play guitar again in my warped drinking mind at all.
But what were you going to do? Because I've had that thought before.
Well, I own a construction company.
Okay.
And I was at that time, I was building my wife and I... who I met my wife in AA, and we had a little company. We ended up building recording studios in Nashville for years. Big studios, yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
And I lucked up as the bottom fell out of that market. I had moved over into building the people that had enough money to build multi-million-dollar studios. I was building their houses, big-ass houses, 7,500, 10,000-square-foot houses. We did that for a long time. And I had kind of quit playing, and Jeff Johnson, our original bass player that left in 87, in 1993, he put the band back together. And I have to admit, the original reason I did it was strictly for the money.
Mm-hmm.
I did not think I could go into clubs again, and
the gift
I got back, I'm not Mr. Religion, but the gift I got back was I love playing guitar, and I could go in a club, play rock music, and leave and not get drunk. You know, and I've been doing that now for 22 years, which is really cool. So we had another 4 or 5 year run with the Scorchers with the original band. And around 96, 97, Jeff decided he wanted to do something else. But this time it wasn't like, go piss up a rope, I hate you. It was just like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
You guys get another bass player. I'll hang out till you get another bass player.
Okay.
And we went along for a while. And it just, as Perry got sicker with the diabetes thing, it got to where he couldn't do shows. And, you know, only in rock and roll, the older you get, the longer you have to play. You can't go in and go, well, our drummer's really ill. We're going to play a 25-minute set.
I don't mean
set.
To laugh, but yeah, that's
the truth. It's true. Like the older you get, the longer you're expected to play. I mean, with Dan, we do 2.5-3-hour shows. We never have an opening act. We just play until Dan plays until the crowd don't want anymore. That's the way we do it. You know, there's no set list, no time length. We just play until he thinks the crowd's kind of tired of hearing loud rock music. That's the way we do it, you know.
Wow.
And it's fun. But as Perry got too ill to do shows, we just kind of let it peter out. And then I started doing solo records and different stuff. Started playing with Dan Baird. And one thing led to another, and we ended up, while I was out with Dan, the Scorchers got offered two festivals in 2007, 2008. We didn't even have a functioning band, you know. And we got offered these two festivals, and I just emailed Jason. It was like, dude, in 2 days, I'll make more money than I'll make all summer long. I'd really like to do these two festivals.
Yeah.
But they were 8 days apart. And he said, well, if you put a band together, I'll gladly come play the shows. I'm not going to rehearse and all that stuff, but, you know. And I was playing. I had been playing some with Al Collins and his band, his wife's band, Stacey Collins. She's got kind of a blues rock thing out of Nashville. And he's a really good bass player, knew some of the Scorcher stuff anyway. And Pontus lives in Europe. He had subbed for us a couple of times in Europe when Perry was so sick he couldn't play, you know. And so I just said, we'll hire these guys. Made them an offer they couldn't refuse. And we went over, played the two festivals, and filled out the 7 or 8 days with club shows. And on the plane ride home, Jason comes back, sits down beside me on the plane. Of course, we're not even riding together, you know. But he comes over, sits down, and goes, wow, that was really fun. Maybe we should. And I was like, of course, I agree. We should, you know, because we'd found the two right guys to do it.
Yeah.
So we did another record, and it was generally received very well. And I think we might do another one next year.
That's awesome, man.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great story.
It's a cool
thing. I love it when that happens.
And this is New Year's Eve. It'll be 33 years later. So I just comprised 33 years in a really quick 15 minutes.
Yeah, you did. You know, I saw him a couple of times in Dallas, Jason.
Jace? Yeah.
Yeah, at Club Clearview.
Yeah.
Like at the end of the night
when
I was
doing solo
going to get
stuff?
Paid. No, I think he's friends with the people that owned it or something. But yeah. I would go in the office to get paid, and then he'd be like, hey, do you know Jason? And I'd be like, oh my God, that's a dude from Jason the Scorchers. I wouldn't say anything.
Oh, yeah.
So
He's a quiet guy. You'd never know he was in the room except when he's on stage.
Right.
He's a real light switch dude.
Yeah.
Know? On
so
stage.
When you guys were touring, who all were you? How were those tours? Like say 83 through 87.
Yeah.
Headlining? Were you opening for people? Were you doing shows with Georgia Satellites?
Well, when the Satellites came out, they were managed by the same.
Okay.
Jason took our managers the cassette tape of Hands to Yourself and went, you guys have got to hear this band.
I fucking love stories like that. Thank you
for
telling
guy,
me.
The guy, Kevin Jennings, who was responsible for getting the Sats their first little EP deal, he also found this other little band called the Black Crows. Kevin was drum teching for us while he was trying to get somebody to listen to this band, the Georgia Satellites. And Kevin had gave Jason and I, as soon as we heard the song, it's like, oh my God, that's a great song, you know. And Jason took our managers the cassette, and one thing led to another, and their record come out, and their first tour was our third record. As we were going downhill, we watched their space shuttle go uphill.
Right.
We did 60-70 shows together. The first 3 months of their tour, they were opening for us before they left us to open for Bob Seger.
Wow.
And Dan tells the story. It's great. We played like a 1,500-seater in Kansas City. They stayed in Kansas City for 2 days, and 2 days later, they were opening up for Seger for 2 nights at Arrowhead Stadium. They went from 1,500-seaters to a football stadium. Yeah. You know? So, it's
That's interesting because their label managed to fit that square peg in a round hole. That didn't sound like anything that was going
on
at the time.
Dan tells the story because he's a replacements, as I am, replacements head too. He said the Scorchers and the Replacements kicked the door open. The Satellites ran through the door as fast as they could before somebody slammed the damn door.
You're right.
You know?
Yeah. Did you guys do stuff with the Replacements?
Oh, yeah.
You very
kindred
spirits.
Oh, yeah. God, what a great band. Oh my God! Yeah,
were you guys drunk like that when you played?
Oh,
were you guys like those guys were like,
they got crazy drunk. We drank a lot, but we tried to keep it pro. I mean, I didn't realize I was an alcoholic in those days, but I tried to keep it pro. I mean, I messed up a few shows, but most of the time I popped my first beer when I went on stage, and you don't have enough time to get drunk inside of a show, you know?
No. Plus, you'd have to piss.
Yeah. mean. Yeah, but it's, you know, those boys got after it. They didn't screw around with it. They got after it. I was real good friends with Bob back in the old days. Bob was just crazy. You know?
Yeah. Let me ask you this, because this is I just listened. I watched the induction speech that Kiss gave last night at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Did you see that?
No.
Oh, Ace said an interesting thing about being in recovery and being sober.
Yeah.
He said that he was glad that awareness was being. God, I hope I say it right because it's so funny. He's like, I hope he's glad that awareness is being raised that alcoholism is a disease and not like a choice that you make.
Yeah.
And he said that his sponsor told him that willpower, as far as being an alcoholic, is a bunch of shit. That's like saying that you have to use willpower. He said, next time you have diarrhea, try to use willpower to stop it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So true.
I mean, is that you're out and you're, I mean, I want to find a way to talk like you, how do you know what, like you hit bottom? What was your bottom? How did you know? I'm not doing it. I got thrown out of fucking Iggy's band for being drunk.
That was the first straw.
Okay.
My ex-wife, I have an older brother that was a very bad alcoholic. And my ex-wife started telling me I was starting to behave like my older brother, which I called her on it, except she was right.
Right.
I was starting to do some crazy stuff. And the end result for me, I always knew I drank too much. I also thought I could walk away. And there was a period in my life where it went from being real fun to I don't want to do this anymore, and I'm drunk again. Well, tomorrow that's it, and I'm drunk again. God, this ain't even any fun, and I'm drunk again. Please let me off this ride, and I'm drunk again. You know, and it was like, wow, what the hell? And that was a 3-year process before I actually found a way to get off the ride. I always thought I'd just walk away from it. And it was a very scary place when it's like, wow, I want to walk away and I'm not walking away. That was a scary place.
That sounds scary. That's like the place a lot of people don't really talk about that.
Well, I mean, it's kind of, you know, my father, a big night drinking was two drinks. That was kicking ass drinking in his head. And it was almost the Bill Cosby comedy skit, like, you know, hugging the toilet. Yeah, Why would you do that?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It only took one time.
Yeah.
An alcoholic, it takes more than one time, you know.
Yeah.
It's the definition of insanity, you know. Doing the same thing, expecting different results. Yeah. I did get different results. It got worse day after day after day. And somewhere along the line, it you know, I'd be a liar to say I didn't have a good time. I had a great time.
Sure.
It just changed. At some point. Somewhere it changed. Yeah. And
it's almost like those movies that have, like, coke things in them. And, like it's all good times at the beginning. Everyone's having a good time.
Oh, yeah.
And then everything starts. Someone dies and people start losing their shit.
And it, you know, like I say, I'm not Mr. Religion. I'm not Mr. Mystic. The gift I got back, and I was scared of it. You know, I was scared to go into clubs. I was scared. Hell, the first Scorcher reunion tour, I wouldn't even sound check. I was like, I'll play the shows. That's it. And Jeff said, cool. I'll deal with everything else. You just play the shows. Because I was scared I was going to go into club and get drunk. That's what I thought I'd do, you know. In my warped thinking, it all went together. And the gift I got back is every blue moon I can put my hands on that 15-year-old kid that wanted to jam, that kept moving the damn record needle back to learn the licks. Every now and then I can put my hands on him, but I'm 54 years old and I can bring 35, 40 years of licks to him. You know, I bring a little bit of common sense to him.
That's what I wanted to get at. Like, how do you approach your creativity now? You're more in touch with it. It's clear.
I'm not actually
to get drunk to get to that place.
No.
You can get to that place.
I'm trying to find that 15-year-old dude that just wants to jam. That's what I'm trying to find. Except that I have long... I love doing the homework. I sit down with the guitar and do what most people do with a computer now. I'll sit down to figure something out And all of a sudden, 4.5 hours later, I'll realize I've been sitting on the bed for 4.5 hours, you know?
That's awesome.
And I sat down to figure out a lick real quick. I love getting lost in the instrument again, you know? It's all these years later, and that's, I guess, as I call it, now I'm on round three. It kind of started when I started playing with Dan and Keith and Mauro Magellan, you know, Keith Christopher, and it's like I go to rock and roll school with those three guys every day, you know? Those guys have been there, done that, got the T-shirt. They're a few years older than I am, and every day I learn something I didn't know, you know? So it's a wonderful thing.
Dan's older than you?
Dan's just turned 60.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, he's in amazing shape.
Were you guys ever tour down here? I would go to that show in a second.
Quite honestly, that's one of the reasons Warner's in Texas. I come down here, I want to try to find somebody to be willing to help book the band. I mean, I don't understand why Dan Baird and Homemade Sin didn't play in Texas. You know, it's a great three-chord rock and roll band, you know.
I'm in this band called Skyrocket, and we get so many requests at shows. We could play 70s and 80s covers Keep Your Hands to Yourself.
Yeah,
I mean, like, so many. And, like, the second you just fucking... I mean, just the... It's almost like that. There's another iconic thing that's almost the same thing in the same key, but super processed sounding. That Robert Palmer.
Oh, yeah.
Addicted to Love.
It's the same.
All you got to do is hit the
Simply
first...
Simply Irresistible.
Those first couple of things. And even though it's just you're jamming on A in a blues song... That song is there. People immediately know exactly.
Dan didn't just write a classic. He wrote a standard. You know, there's 4,000 bands in America are going to play that damn song tonight.
Yeah.
You know, it's just good for him.
It's too bad. I like Battleship Chains, too. That was another big song for me with them. I thought that song was amazing.
Yeah. That's a Terry Anderson song.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Whatever happened to the guy that kind of had Slash hair in that band?
Rick Richards?
Is that the guitar guy?
Yeah, yeah.
That played the Lucite guitar?
They still tour as the Georgia Satellites.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And then you just tour with Dan?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's Dan Baird and Homemade Sin.
Okay.
And it's in that we do some Satellite stuff, Dan's two solo records that he had on Deaf American, and then Homemade Sin.
Right.
Homemade Sin has recorded a couple of records, too. So that's kind of Dan's umbrella for all of his stuff under that umbrella.
Well, that's good.
Oh, it's fantastic, man.
Do you do any of your songs? He just does all of songs.
Yeah, it's Dan's thing. I do a solo thing where I go into a town and hire a bass player and drummer and just do a trio thing that's kind of cool.
Tonight you're doing solo or you doing...
Tonight is just me with an acoustic guitar.
How often do you do that?
Not very.
How's that?
It's kind of cool because I can draw out of every pool. I mean, obviously, I'll pull heavily out of the Scorcher stuff and my solo stuff, but I can pull out of Dan Baird and Homemade Sin because I've wrote some of it. I can pull out of my new band, the Bluefields, because I helped write all that stuff. And, you know, it's kind of a cool thing. I pull out some covers that everybody knows. You got to do them.
What would you cover when you cover something?
Back in the USSR, the Beatles, you know, some Fogerty stuff, Fortunate One. Yeah. You know, it's a...
I'm trying to figure out, like, do you think that at some point when these guys said cowpunk and New Sincerity, no one wanted to say Southern Rock? Do you think Southern Rock is an ugly thing? Because I think it's amazing.
No, not at all. I mean, especially
tradition.
All these years later, hell yeah, throw me in there. You know, hell, I'm from the South. I wanted to play rock. Our problem is, it's kind of what Dan talks about. I mean, we wanted to be in the Rolling Stones and the Faces. We just didn't sound like that.
No,
but that's what we wanted to do.
But it's the same. It's the same thing, like Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. I mean, they lived in L.A. now for forever.
Yeah, but they're from
Florida.
But
they are a fucking... There's a boogie to what we do, especially especially in the Southeast. There's like a boogie thing that happens there in Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama.
Yeah,
you know, Florida, Northern Florida.
Well, the Skinner Boys.
Skinner Boys.
I was fortunate in high school. I got to see the real band three or four times. And you just didn't realize how damn great it really was. You know, those boys.
That's not lost on me, man. I pay reverence to that band so much because that's
people,
a band, man.
People forget, you know, the 72 Stones tour where they're playing with the Stones and they get thrown off the tour when the Rolling Stones is the greatest rock and roll band in the world because they're eating the Stones for breakfast.
Yeah.
And then they go out with the Who and do the same damn thing. They're eating the Who for breakfast.
Yeah.
Because they were awesome. You know, they were great at what they did, and they had three great guitar players, a great bassist, and a monster piano keyboard player.
Yeah.
They could do their records. What? It was like, wow.
Yeah, when I meet people that'll talk shit about them, I always go, that movie Freebird, where they're playing in England.
Yeah.
And, like, people waving Confederate flags in England, they don't even know what they're doing. They're just so into it. And watching that band, I think what you're saying, too, is, and tell me if I'm wrong, when they were opening for The Who and they were opening for The Stones, both of those bands were a little bloated at the time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They were taking helicopters to a plane to a fucking...
And Skinner was coming.
They were
both
hungry.
They were coming.
Yeah, they got the wrong band to open for them. They weren't going to be cushy. They're like, this is going to be our fucking gig.
Sure. And they weren't scared or intimidated. No. You know, I mean, think about it. Opening for the Stones now, you're opening for the damn Rolling Stones. Yeah. You know, my God.
Yeah.
Hierarchy of rock and roll.
Yeah.
The only thing bigger is the Beatles. You know, they didn't care. Just dumbass kids that just went, fuck y'all, here's our shit, you know?
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So when you started out on drums, you were living in Nashville?
Yeah.
And
well, my dad was in the military, and my parents had a country show band. I played drums in their band when I was 10 years old, so.
So?
I was raised in a musical family.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, lucky. I thought every kid, when we moved to Nashville, I thought every teenager played in their parents' country band, you know? And I actually, moving to Nashville, I had friends that did, friends that, their parents were, it was just, it wasn't a foreign thing in Nashville.
No. So when you were raised on that music, and you said that, I was reading a thing that like in 1973 you saw the AC/DC show?
Yeah.
And switched to guitar?
74 Four, maybe? Yeah. Oh, dude, it changed my life. You know, the first time I saw Bon Scott era AC/DC,
where was it? Nashville?
Oh my God, yeah. Oh my God, man. It was like, wow, I want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, it was just incredible stuff. You know, and it's still, I've seen the band 105 times.
Really?
Oh yeah. it's the one guaranteed I'm a 15-year-old kid. For 2 hours or however long it is they're playing. They've never let me down. I've never seen a bad show. I saw one show in Houston when Malcolm was in rehab. They had a nephew playing guitar where they had to stop a couple of times. And Angus lost his mind. But they had a great show. And I saw them on the same tour in Nashville, and they were unbelievable on that same tour. They've never let me down. Yeah, it's. I always know what I've got. They're not going to reinvent the wheel. You're not getting anything different,
right?
I go rounds on Facebook all the time with people putting Brian Johnson down. And it's like, dude, Bond's dead. No Brian Johnson. No AC/DC. AC/DC or no? You know?
I thought how lucky for the other guys that they were able to find a guy that was able to pick up where they left off and keep on going. What Bond would have wanted for those guys.
Like it, don't like it. Completely unpredictable. The biggest selling record of their career was when the Phoenix had died.
Yep.
You know, Bond was gone, and they pulled that out of the fire. Back in Black. Like it, don't like it. It sold and still sells. I watched my teenagers all go buy the record at a certain point. You know, the record goes gold every year. It has. They sell 500,000-700,000 copies every year. Freaking here.
Yeah.
It's one of those records where you got to get another one. Mine don't play anymore. You got to get another one. You know?
So, yeah.
Great band.
Hey, let me ask you this. How are you with with the changing formats of music? Do you have any problem with MP3s being low grade?
You know what? I have to admit, no. At first, I fought it tooth and nail, but it's that genie's out of the bottle, man. We ain't putting that genie back in the bottle.
Yeah.
All bullshit aside, I don't think I own a stereo. I listen to all my music in the car or on my iPod or on my computer. And I probably deserve to be slapped for that, but I don't think I have a functioning stereo in my house. The way we thought of stereos.
Right.
You know, I surely don't have a turntable.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I'm into it. I think I'm just into the ritual of putting on a record. I don't know the difference of the sound.
I loved it. I loved it. You know, I mean,
I like going to a store too. I miss that.
Yeah.
I do the also artwork, like,
you know, the size of an album.
Yeah.
And you get a CD, which now is, there, you know, that'll be gone soon.
Very soon.
You know. But it's like when that format changed, it was like, oh man, how do you transfer? How do you translate an artwork down to this? You
know? Hey, we haven't talked much about the Bluefields.
Oh yeah,
let's talk about that.
Yeah.
What is that? What's going on here?
Well, it started out as my next solo record. I had done the record you got there in front of you, Centerline.
Centerline, yeah. This is today.
Right before I joined Dan's band. Dan's the other guitar player on that band, and he come in the studio one day and slapped down CDs and went, learn these, I need a guitar player for a tour. I've been there 7 or 8 years. But the Bluefields thing, the Pure record, started out as my next solo record.
Right.
But Dan ended up showing up one day. I've got my buddy Joe owns the studio, and we're writing songs for my solo record. Joe's singing under his breath, and it's like, my God, he's a way better singer than I am. And then Dan shows up one day, and he's like, well, can I play bass on some of this stuff? And I was like, well, sure, you're Dan Baird, you know, if you can do whatever the hell you want to do. And Steve Gorman from the Crows played drums on that record. And it was, you know, as it started getting done, it's like, my God, this is a band project, not a solo record.
So how much do you guys get out and play? I mean, you made 3 records. You get out and play a lot?
Not a lot, but some. We're going to Europe with it this summer. We went to Europe with it last year, and we probably did 15, 20 American shows. I'd love to bring that down here at some point.
Yeah.
It's a really cool band. We now have Brad, the last 2 records, we got Brad Pemberton from Ryan Adams' band, a drummer,
yeah,
plays drums with us, and it's a cool little band, you know?
Oh, that's a great band.
And I kind of scratch, we head off into all kinds of areas, but I scratch my Zeppelin itch inside of that. There's a lot of double neck and drop dad gad tunings.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, it's a... I originally approached it. It was like, you know, I've worked real hard. It's not Homemade Sin. It's not Jason and the Scorchers. It's a different thing, and we work real hard to keep the things separate. And I was just like, you know what? I'm going to do a Zeppelin record. Not a Zeppelin influence record, a Zeppelin record. They're not doing any, so I don't care,
yeah. You
know? And I originally was playing drums on it, too. And then Steve had just moved to town, Steve Gorman. It was like, oh, my God, you know, let's get Steve to do it.
Yeah.
He's actually played with Pagey. This will work.
Yeah. Did you do you switch from Telecaster? Are you, like, strictly Telecaster? Can you go to Les Paul for that?
The Scorchers is my Telecaster thing. In the Bluefields, I do all kinds of stuff. In Dan's band, because he's got Steve Marriott's Tele. You know, he's Mr. Telecaster.
Yeah.
So I play Les Pauls in Dan's band. Excuse me. I play Les Pauls in Dan's band, which is kind of a cool thing because I had to learn how to play a Les. It's such a different animal.
Yeah.
You know, I'd played Tellys until I was mid-40s.
Wow.
You know, I'd never owned. You know, I'd borrowed a few Les Pauls when I needed to do power chords in the studio or something, but I didn't own one.
Right.
So I got a couple Les Pauls, one of which is just a monster guitar that it's actually... a weird thing. I grabbed that guitar before I grabbed my main Tele now, and I've never been that guy, you know.
Yeah.
And I'll find myself like, wow, I brought a Les Paul. That's weird, you know.
what's your favorite Tele?
I have an old white Tele that's just spectacular
with the maple neck.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And it looks like it's chopped down a bunch of trees. I know it's a good guitar because if Dan's around, he picks it up and starts playing it, and then I have to try to get it back from him. So I know it's a good guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Dan ain't interested in anything that ain't old and beat up.
Right.
So.
Do you switch up your amps for the bands? Or what do you...
Studio-wise, yeah. Live, no.
What's your rig live?
I use an AC-15 or 30.
Okay.
And in tandem, I always use 2 amps. I use an Orange Dual Terror.
Oh, cool.
Through a 2x12 Helitone cabinet that Brendan O'Brien turned us on to Helitone speakers, Dan and I, and always run it at 15
watts. Do you still
watts.
See him? Is he still around, Brendan O'Brien?
No. Well, he's around, but we don't make enough money to see Brendan.
Oh, I can see that.
Yeah, Brendan's off on his own tangent. When you start taking flying lessons, you're not down here with me no more.
So. No. What's he doing? I haven't heard his name, though, in a long time.
Oh, my God, dude. He produced the last AC/DC record.
Oh, Jesus.
He's produced the last couple
What is he doing? I don't think he's working.
He's produced the last couple of Springsteen records. He's done a couple of Dylan records. I mean, he's went on to do, I mean, he did all that Pearl Jam stuff. Yeah. Stone Temple Pilot, you know. Yeah.
I know the stuff, the 90s stuff was pretty big. Well, stuff. He did a great record that not a lot of people talk about called MP4.
Yeah.
With, no, that wasn't the name of it. Michael Penn. He did a Michael Penn record that was incredible.
Sean Penn's brother?
Uh-huh.
Yep. Probably so. Yeah, he's a talented guy. Yeah,
amazing.
Brendan's a monster. I mean, it's Love Songs for the Hearing Impaired, Dan's first solo record.
Yes.
It's basically Keith and Mo and Dan with Brendan engineering. He produced it too, although he didn't get the credit, I don't guess. Ruben did.
Right.
But Brendan played guitar on it. And it's one of my three, if I only get three records to go to the desert island with me, that's one of the three records
what
I'm going to bring
other two?
With me. Power Age and Exile.
Okay.
Power Age by AC/DC, AC/DC, best 10. I want Back in Black's production on Power Age.
Yeah.
That's what I want. I won't get it, but that's what I want. So.
Do you know those guys at all?
AC/DC? I've met them a few times. I was very fortunate in 86 in Australia. Angus and his wife come to a couple of Scorcher shows, got to hang out with Angus for a long time. Sorry, that's me.
That's all right.
Just cut that off. It was way cool. He came to soundcheck and stayed till we were done. You know, I literally walked in the dressing room, looked over, did the double take, and it's like, oh, my God, that's Angus Young, you know. Hung out. It was awesome. One of those, thank God, most of my heroes I've got to meet was like, oh, God, I wish I'd never met them, you know. That wasn't the case with Angus, thank God. He was just, he's Angus Young, you know, he's great. I'm very pleased, very
good.
Happy. And it was my birthday. It was a great
birthday. Oh, that's awesome.
It was a great birthday.
Yeah. What a great birthday.
Yeah.
Okay, so what should we expect from Warner Hodges this year, 2014?
This year, I'm getting ready to start really touring again in May. My son gets married May 17th, which is
how many
real,
kids do you have?
Three.
Wow, you're gonna have a married kid.
Well, actually, I'm a grandpa, man.
You're a grandpa.
Yeah, my oldest daughter. Yeah, oh yeah, hell yeah. One of the coolest things that's ever happened in the world. I never thought of myself as grandpa material.
No.
Shh.
None of us do.
Dude, that child made eye contact with me. Done.
Yeah.
Wrapped. She gets anything I'm capable of giving her for the rest of my life.
That's great.
Never thought I'd be that guy.
Yeah.
You know, she's spectacular. It's cool.
And you get to be there for all this stuff. Like present for it, not wasted.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's pretty cool. My youngest daughter graduated from Vanderbilt Law.
Wow.
And I actually made that. I missed the high school graduation and the college graduation. She asked me not to miss the law school graduation, and I didn't.
Good. Do they like, they come to your jams? They like
my oldest daughter used to. My son's kind of into it. My youngest daughter, I'm her dad. I'm not a musician. I think she's seen me play once. She doesn't want that guy. I'm supposed to be her dad. That's okay.
I can understand that.
And she's not really Miss Music anyway. She doesn't listen to a lot of music. It's just not what she does. And that's okay. You know? I keep telling my granddaughter, she loves the music. It's like, I got to get her playing. If she does, she hits the guitar lottery, man. I've got guitars that got to go somewhere.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to play them. You know?
Yeah.
I need my granddaughter to learn how to play them.
So. Yeah. Well, maybe you can teach her.
If she's interested.
So you're going to go on tour after your son's wedding.
Yeah. I'm out with Dan in May and June in Europe. Come home for a couple weeks. Go back to Europe with the Bluefields in July and August. Go back in September with Dan. Back in October and November with Dan. And then I stay over and do solo W8 Warner gigs in December.
Okay.
And got a new Jason and the Scorchers DVD coming out from our 30th anniversary show.
Wow, what was that?
Literally goes to the factory this week.
Wow. Where did you guys do that?
Nashville.
Okay.
Which is kind of cool because it's got the new guys in it and it's got a bunch of the new songs. We did a live record 97, 98. It's got a lot of the old stuff. And then this has got some of the old stuff too, but there's a bunch of the new stuff with the new guys too.
That's good.
And what else? Next year, you know, Jason and I did a thing at the Kennedy Center this year with a ballet troupe.
Really?
Which was, just like
crazy. Yeah, you that sounds kind of crazy, doesn't it?
And yeah. And next year, we're actually doing a program with the Scorchers as the orchestra. at the Kennedy Center and then taking that on the road, which was, it was just crazy enough to sign. You know, it was like, yeah, I think I'll sign up for that. That sounds absolutely insane.
You didn't think, like, at some point in 1983 or so, that you would be a sober grandpa.
No, playing the Kennedy
in the
Center.
Orchestras with Jason and the Scorchers at the Kennedy Center.
Thank God they put Jason and I up on stage with it. But no, I did not. No,
that's amazing.
Kennedy
that's
Center
awesome.
Is like, what the hell, you know?
Yeah.
Which is great. And we're doing that next year. And I think that'll be while we got Pontus over. That's when we'll record another record. And then the next year, we'll do some Scorcher dates, which would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
And that has become good because people come out. It's like, wow, they might not ever come back. We better come this time.
Yeah.
And we do it very infrequently. So when we do it, the crowds are great.
What time is your thing tonight?
8 o'clock. 8 p.m.
Well, why don't I go?
I think you should.
Well, I was supposed to have a gig, but it got postponed to May.
Well, then you should come.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't have anything to do. In fact, today I was thinking to myself, what in the world is there to do tonight on a Friday night with nothing to do?
Please come.
Yeah, I would love to. I never go to Jason and Penny's anyway.
Oh, well, you need to come. Yeah. Jason thinks you're the coolest guy in the world.
Well, Jason and I have
go
been
back a long time.
Too long.
Yeah.
Yeah, since...
He says y'all played soccer
together in fifth grade. Before Jason and the Scorchers.
What year was that?
1979.
That was before Jason and the Scorchers. I actually talked to some drunk fan the other night that had seen us in 1977. And I had, you know, I didn't have the heart to point out that in 1977, I was still in high school, dude. There was no Jason and the Scorchers. It was a great show that he really enjoyed, so I just let him keep enjoying it, you know? It's like, have at it, man.
I had a thing like that with the dude from the Smithereens. Remember that band?
Yeah.
That guy and I were having a cigarette because they were playing the same show. We were like opposite sides of the room or whatever, taking turns doing sets. And I was like, yeah, I saw you with INXS and Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, yeah, 1985. And I was like, oh, no, that was 88. And he was like, no, it was 1985. And I was like, look, dude, I don't want to be a dick. I'm a nerd. You were there. It might be fuzzy to you, but I remember where I was when I drove to fucking Dallas to see you play.
Sure.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah. So,
no, this guy, there was, I realized he was just drunk enough that I wasn't going to argue with him. But it's like 77 was 4 years before the first Jason and the Scorcher show.
Wow.
So, you know, I was still in high school. Hell, Perry was like in eighth grade at that time. You know?
Wow. Well, man, you guys, I hope that you guys have a great year. I'm looking forward then to the show tonight to seeing you play alone. I'm interested. Do you play different guitars?
Or do you just play one? Tonight I'm going to just play an acoustic.
Okay.
You know,
but sometimes,
kind of
like
fun.
Neil Young always has like 90 of them.
Oh, well, no, I'm not quite at that level. Neil's a little bit above me.
Charlie Sexton also, solo acoustic Charlie Sexton show, there's a lot of guitars.
Oh, my God, Charlie's a badass.
He is a badass.
Dude, he's monster.
I'm not saying he doesn't deserve
them. I haven't seen Charlie in a long time, but Charlie and Will, they're buddies. And, you know,
Will and the Kill were around during the time of Jason and the Scorchers.
Hell, for years, I lived in New York for a while. Will was just around the block from me, so it was cool.
Yeah, didn't he live like on Bleecker Street or something?
For a while, I'm sure he did. I lived on the Upper East Side for a while, too, till I got caught in my illegal rent control and had to move.
You go up there a lot now?
No, I don't get up there nearly as much as I used to. I lived there from 85 to 90.
Yeah.
And I get up there a little bit, but not like I used to.
Right. Staying in Nashville. It's a good town.
Well, I mean, quite honestly, if I had to be dead up honest, I'd spend 4 to 6 months a year in Europe.
Yeah.
And if I didn't have kids, I could work 11 months a year in Europe.
So, yeah,
it's crazy.
Do you? I've talked to some people about this. That it seems like rock and roll doesn't get as much play here now. It's almost like a novelty, where over there it's still a regular style of music.
You know what it seems like, and I don't know, but it doesn't seem to be America Idol driven first. And if you were good and you've gotten a little older, they don't care. They still keep coming.
Do you think it's because the audiences stay into music as they get older and here people feel like they need to get into something else because that's something that from their past? Or do you think young people are like, fuck yeah, want to go see the Dan Baird or Jason the Scorchers. Or...
Possibly. It also seems, and I don't know to be fact, but it also seems, in general, we play earlier. And you can get some, our crowd in general is close.
Funny to say, but it's true.
Our crowd is close to our age, if not our age.
Yeah.
And somebody 45, 50.
I'm not going out at 11.
You can get them out at 7:30, 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
They ain't coming on Monday night if you go on at 11:30.
No way.
I ain't going.
Yeah.
I don't want to be there. Why in the hell would I expect them to?
Yeah.
And in general, most nights in Europe, we're back at the hotel 10:30, 11.
We've
done the show.
Yeah.
And, you know, with Dan, it's not unusual for us to sell out Sunday nights and Monday nights in clubs because we play at 7:30, latest 8 o'clock, you know. And you can go see that show, go home, get a night's sleep, and go to work tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, and for whatever reason, in
general.
Same
thing like if you were going to see Van Halen or AC/DC.
Yeah. But that just doesn't seem to work here.
No.
I don't know why the clubs haven't went that route. Dan talked to all his promoters. He's like, look, the drunks ain't leaving. If your bar's open, they're going to stay and drink till you quit surfing.
Yeah, instead of having an opening band, have an after band.
Well, and he does that. He's like, yeah, let us finish. Give us an hour, 30 minutes to sell some merch and talk to people, 30 minutes to get out of here and put a band on after us. Have at it. And that's what they do.
Yeah, turn the room.
It's fantastic, yeah. You know. And that just hasn't seemed to catch on here.
Well, you know, maybe it will.
You've got your few towns, your New Yorks and shit, that people will still... There's enough people that will still go
right,
out.
Right.
But, you know, hell, in Nashville now, I miss half the shows because I just... If you're going on at midnight, dude, you're going to have to be AC/DC playing in my living room for me to be there. You know? You're going to have to be Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
Playing in my living room for
me to come
at 12:30 at night.
Yeah.
It's going to have to be that damn good.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I probably ain't going to be there.
Yeah. During South by Southwest, there's this band right now. It's kind of a big buzz band called Fantagram.
Yeah.
One of my best friends was like, oh, we got to go see this band. It's fucking lying like around the block at South by Southwest. I had a badge and everything. I was like, I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was like, no, man, it's going to be Fantagram. And then Snoop Dogg. And I was like, dude, I don't care if it's the Beatles.
Yeah.
I don't want to stand in line for the most of the night.
Sure, exactly.
To see the last 40 minutes or last 20 minutes of a band.
Exactly. That's just like, sorry, dude.
Yeah.
You know, been there, done that, got the T-shirt. Ain't going to happen.
Yeah, ain't going to happen.
You know,
that's true.
That's a 20-year-old game.
Yeah.
I ain't in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know Tony Scalzo from the band Fastball?
He don't know him, but I love the band.
Yeah, he's like, what am I going to miss if I don't go to a party? The coolest party in the world? Probably not. I've been to the coolest party in the world, and it really wasn't that
cool.
Wasn't
that cool. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So on that note, Warner Man, thank you. And people can find your music. They can find Centerline on iTunes. What about the Bluefields? They can find that as well on iTunes?
Yep.
A central location
Or go to www.thebluefields.com.
There you go.
There you go. All right.
Thank you very much, man.
Visit me on Facebook.
Yeah. Visit Warner Hodges. Warner E. Hodges.
Thank you.
All right. Warner Hodges, there's some new Jason and the Scorchers for you. Man, that guy was great. Great hang, great talent, man. Love it. Great combo. I did not make it to his show that night, and I was pretty sad about it, but I heard it was great from my friend Jason, who put it on. Anyway, listen, Warner Hodges, check out his many things. The Bluefields, Jason and the Scorchers, also plays with Dan Baird, also has a solo thing, Warner Hodges. All right, and while you're out there on the internet checking out the Warner Hodges, get on the iTunes, subscribe to this podcast, How Did I Get Here? While you're there, rate it, leave a comment. That helps our overall rating, which helps us secure advertising. You can like our Facebook page, which is also called How Did I Get Here? And you can follow me on Twitter and on Instagram. I am at Johnny Gowdy. Did I sound matter of fact when I said that? You're goddamn right I did. I am matter of fact, people. How about if we go out with some music from the Bluefields? Huh? That was a great conversation. What a great guy. Great talent. Doing a lot of interesting musical stuff and keeping the old band together, which I think is cool. Jason and the Scorchers. All right. Let's hear some from the Bluefields. Warner Hodges, great guest. Go check him out. And thank you, Warner, for coming by. Thank you, Jason and Penny, for hooking me up with him. Here's some music. Let's get down. Yeah.
You make that.